The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, World Cup playoffs. Crispy Zlat. It's on, everybody, as the Kings of the Impossible go head-to-head in Friday's massively anticlimactic dull 0-0 draw. We preview that and the other playoff thrillers. Ukraine-France, Iceland-Croatia. Meanwhile, England, troubled by a stomach bug before Chile, instead of the other way round. Still, as long as they get the ball to Andros Townsend, should be okay, eh, Roy? We round up the other news. Managerial merry-go-round ahoy as Karanka joins Middlesbrough, Muhlenstein goes to Fulham, and Palace prepare the guest room for Mr. and Mrs. No-Mates. There's Sid, Jonathan Wilson, posts, tweets, police inspectors, and more in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hanging here in near-Earth orbit, unable to hear from Houston, with a... The creaking pod packed out to the rafters. We've got young Jacob Steinberg.
Have you seen a film recently?
I have. Will you ever see Earth again, Jacob?
I haven't seen the film.
Oh, have you not?
No.
Don't
ruin it.
I'm not going to ruin it. I might enhance it, if anything. But nice to see you anyway, Jacob. Barry Glendinning's here, aren't you?
I am, yes. Hey. Barry in the blind.
Right, absolutely. Hey, Philippe. Philippe Auclair.
Hello, Jim. Yeah. I haven't seen it either.
Have you just stepped off a kind of... Breton trawler.
Well, what is it? The string of onions is a giveaway, I suppose.
No, it's that rather fetching fisherman's knitwear, yeah.
It's Paul Smith.
Who is it?
Yes.
Wow.
You see?
Yeah.
Paul Lefebvre.
And top man at Big Paper, Marcus Christensen.
I don't know where my jumper is from, but I'm here.
Right, you're looking good anyway, Marcus.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for taking time out from your busy preparations for the game of game, Marcus, the game of game.
Yes, indeed. But I got my tickets for the Swedish pub in London. I'm going there. There early. It's sold out, and it's going to be a big atmosphere.
How come you sent Barney Roney to Lisbon for the game rather than going yourself?
I tried to send myself, but I wasn't allowed to go.
You weren't allowed to go? No. Really?
Mm.
But Barney was considered
it's spendable. It's like Barney to get a glamorous away trip like that. He never gets sent to any big games. I think he deserves it.
Right. Well, he's obviously in Lisbon to see... Sweden take on Portugal, except it's the other way around, of course. And now, I was just hinting at the fact that there's been so much build-up about the fact that you got Zlatan, you got Cristiano, they both warmed up for this game with hat-tricks.
Yeah.
Is it going to be... How much fun will this game actually be, do you think?
I'll be more nervous than anything, I think, and I don't see it as any fun at all, I must say. And I think the two teams could well cancel themselves out. And you look around those two players and they aren't that good, actually. And that's why they're in the playoffs, even though Sweden obviously had Germany in their group. But I think Portugal have the edge. If you look at the other players, I mean, you could compare Nani with Johan Elmander. It's probably only one winner. Contra with Mikael Lusti. Well, I don't know, actually. But you look at Portugal's players, and they are slightly better than Sweden.
So we're doing that thing of who would, from one side, would get into the other team.
And yeah.
It'd be kind of Portuguese pretty much all the way.
Yeah.
Really?
Pretty much, yeah.
Right. Well, what happened to Portugal? Because semi-finals of the Euros, and then they kind of came apart in the qualifiers. Northern Ireland and Israel as well, of course.
They haven't played well for quite some time, and they're being bailed out by Ronaldo. But Sweden as well, we were pretty dire. We could have lost to the Faroes, but Zlatan bailed us out and then called them a bunch of fishermen, which is kind of what he does if he doesn't say something about someone's facial hair, which he did the other week.
But, yeah. What's he said about, has he said anything about the Portuguese?
No, but the build-up in Sweden has been slightly different because there's a big row over Anders Svensson, who is still playing, you'd be surprised to hear. He was given a Volvo, whereas the our female with the most caps, Therese Sjögran, wasn't given one. And there's 2 days of media activities, and she's now probably going to get a car, and Anders Svensson is quite embarrassed about it at home.
He was given a car because of the number of caps he's won.
Yes,
yeah?
146.
How many has she got?
I think 187.
Right, well, even more.
And no car.
And no car.
Yeah, but there's some offers being lined up now for her.
She should basically get a Volvo with a slightly bigger engine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
146?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And the best thing about Anders Svensson, well, I think he's great, but his nickname is Taco Anders.
Oh, yeah, why is that?
He likes tacos.
Right, okay then.
Almost scored the greatest goal of all time in the World Cup.
Yes.
Hit the post.
The pirouette and then hit the post, yes, I remember that. I was on the floor somewhere what in Swiss cottage, Anders Svensson?
Is he must be getting towards 40. He seems to have been around forever.
He started young. I think he's 37, 38. Oh. He's not Javier Zanetti age.
And he's at Elfsborg, is he?
Yes. Good knowledge. Thank you.
What position is he playing, Marcus?
Central midfield.
There you go. Jacob, what's going to happen in Lisbon?
I think Portugal will win.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Barry?
I don't know, really. As far as I know, Sweden have never lost in Lisbon in 7 meetings.
Mm, great.
I read that somewhere the other day. Got sent around these stats by Infostrada.
All right.
which I forgot to bring up with me. But I'm pretty sure I read that Sweden have never lost in Portugal in 6 or 7 meetings, winning 2 and the rest were draws. So, you know, but that was then, this is now, and it's the first time for everything. But I wouldn't say they're without a chance.
All right. Well, it's playoff football, isn't it? Anything could happen. Will both teams come out from the blocks roaring at each other? Will they make a real...
No, can't see that happening, actually. I think it's going to be... I'm hoping for a draw. But the Swedish player seems up for it, and the national coach said they would radiate courage and quality on the night. And another thing I should possibly mention regarding the build-up is that lots of Swedish players were shown a picture of Ronaldo crying after their 2004 exit from the Euros. And lots of, well, what could they respond? They kind of said, yeah, it'd be good if he looked like that on Friday and stuff like that. So everyone's up for it.
Right. Sorry, I can officially confirm that Sweden have played 7 times in Portugal, 1-4, drawn 3.
How did you just rustle that up?
Pardon?
How did you?
Because I had actually written it down.
Oh, you have written it. What did you write down, Barry?
Well, interestingly or not, as the case may be, Cristiano Ronaldo and Zlatan are both second highest scorers for their countries. Ronaldo on 43 is 4 behind Pedro Poletta, and Zlatan is on 46, just 3 behind Sven Rydell, which means either or both could break the record over the course of these 2 games.
Very true, Philippe.
Yeah, I was going to say that this Portuguese team, you see on paper, you think, well, that's pretty damn good, but you look at the shape they're in individually. Yeah. I don't know if you look at Nani, is nowhere near Manchester United starting 11. You look at Moutinho, he's not playing well at all for Monaco at the moment. Miguel Veloso is very doubtful as well. Yeah. Would be a great loss for them. Meireles has more or less lost his football. So you're thinking, well, Ander Postiga, okay. So I don't know, I can feel the Swedes doing perhaps something.
Excellent. This is good news.
Plus that whole kind of motivational kick of pinning up a picture of Ronaldo on tears, possibly in his underpants, I don't know. and Photoshop it on the dressing room, you know, wall. Boy, they're going to be fired up.
Well, Eric Hamrie and
Pepe as well is also not in the best of shape. He's got about the problem in his glutinous maxims, yes, apparently. So
what would the Portuguese pin up on their wall, do you think?
Zlatan.
Yeah, but I don't think that's going to help, is it?
It's going to frighten them.
Yeah. Right, okay. Oh, it's such a game.
They could put up a picture of ABBA.
Absolutely.
Or play ABBA. At
this point, it's traditional to mention IKEA flat pack instructions. You can put some of those up. Your chance to pay them back. Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be a fascinating scene there. Possibly more fascinating than when the match actually starts. We don't know. But in the meantime, Philippe, of course, you've got your own worries, haven't you?
Yeah.
Kiev. It's very cold there, apparently.
Yeah, it is. It is very, very cold.
Is that going to impact on France?
That's the least of our worries. No, I don't think so. We're quite used to that. You should play in the Lorraine, or in the east of France during the winter. I'm looking at the team as well, and we've got the same problem that the Portuguese have. There's loads of players in that Deschamps team who are not exactly at the top of their game at the moment. The difference, of course, we've got Franck Ribéry,
right?
But I'm also a little bit wary of the fact that when Ukraine was drawn, it was relief all round. People were saying, oh, this is wonderful, because, you know, they've never beaten us. We beat them at the Euro. And then you try to explain to them, well, it's a very different side from the one that was beaten at the Euro. The old stars have all gone. There's a new generation in place, a new manager in place. They finished the qualification group in some style. And the main thing is that their most dangerous players will target the two greatest weaknesses of France, which is the flanks, the defense on the flanks. Debuchy, who is just a yellow card waiting to happen, and we saw it again this weekend, and Patrice Evra, who can't defend. And you've got Konoplyanka on one side and Yarmolenko on the other, and that's a frightening prospect. I'm not reassured.
Right.
At all.
Okay. And in the middle, of course, you've got Hugo Lloris. Is he now clear to play?
He's playing. He's playing. He was when France trained yesterday. It's actually quite strange. The training sessions are open to everybody, so you can more or less have an idea where the team is going to be like, because you can see the positions and the players who've got the red bibs and the yellow bibs. So we have got a pretty good idea of what the team is going to look like. Mm. And of course, Lloris will be in goal.
Right. Well, for all your concerns about French players not in form, they've got plenty who are. Ribéry looking great.
Yeah.
Paul Pogba looked fantastic for Juve the other day. Benzema's
we'll
doing
play.
Well. And you're super tight at the back, aren't you? Not you personally,
super
Philippe,
tight.
But as a nation, you've only conceded 2 goals in your last 6 matches.
Yeah, but have you seen against whom we've played?
Well, it was against
Belarus. We conceded 2 against Belarus, and actually we're not looking too good in that game before Evra's famous halftime talk.
Right.
Then we beat Australia, which is like beating nobody. Then we beat Finland. It was the most convincing performance. But the defence is the weak spot. I mean, Eric Abidal is in very, very poor form with Monaco. He's going to be next to Koscielny, with Evra probably, as I said, on the left-hand side, and Debuchy on the right. And I would imagine Deschamps is going to use his usual very, very conservative 3 holding midfielders formation. And Pogba will be there on the right. He played on the left, didn't he, for Juve this weekend, I think. But he would play on the right on this occasion. Blaise Matuidi and either Yohan Cabaye or Samir Nasri.
Blaise Matuidi. Jacob, you've seen a lot of the Ukraine in England's qualifying group, no?
Saw them in that awful game against England.
Right.
Yeah.
Unbeaten against the 3 Lions.
They were, but they should have... Well, they needed to win that game against England at home.
That's true.
In September, and they were pretty dire in that game. They needed to take the initiative, and they weren't really able to. They didn't have that many chances.
Would you be tuning into this game?
No, I'll be watching Zlatan v.
Right.
That's on Sky as well, isn't it? That's the one that's on Sky.
Other options include, Jacob, for your Friday entertainment, Romania, Greece. Greece have won their last 5 qualifiers without conceding. They're calling it Ouzo football over there. Retsina football. Barry.
Well, it could be argued they were very unlucky to only finish second in the group, because it's 25 points.
Right.
And still finish second. But they finished second on goal difference, but it was quite a considerable goal difference, because they only scored 12 times in 10 games in a group, including Liechtenstein, Lithuania, and Latvia. So, you know, you'd think they'd want to be filling their boots a bit more in games like that, but... So it would suggest they're not a very exciting team to watch, and I think people don't want them to qualify.
All right. Well, what are the chances, then, of Iceland beating Croatia? They've got their first leg. First leg's in Reykjavik, isn't that right?
Yep. And if I'm not wrong, it's the first time they've played an international at this time of the year in Iceland, as late as that. I may be wrong, but I think that's what...
You may well be right.
And the... weather conditions are going to be something else.
Yeah.
Well, I spoke to Idiger Johnson on Tuesday, and I said, "How's the weather?" And he said, "No, it's pretty nice actually." I said, "What is it?" He goes, "Oh, it's -3."
-3. Yeah. So, what are they anticipating for the game?
He said it's going to be okay. He said if it had been played last Sunday, then it would have been called off because there was a massive storm. But he said, "Oh, it's okay because it's not really windy and it's not snowy, so this is nice for us."
What, do you often speak to Idiger Johnson, or you?
I was interviewing him.
Right. What else did he have to say?
He's got a weird ringtone when you call him. It plays music. I was slightly thrown by that.
So when you call him up in your phone, you can hear music playing at his end.
Yeah.
What music was he?
I can't remember. It was for about 2 seconds. But it was
clearly
off.
It would be Bjork or
the Sugar Cubes.
Yeah. The Sugar Cubes. Yeah.
Or.
Sigur Rós,
yes. Yeah. And that's it, we've come to the end of our knowledge of Icelandic independent music.
Marcus, what kind of ringtone does Lars Lagerbäck have?
He didn't have one.
Ah.
And comes as no surprise, probably knowing the man.
Why? What kind of a man is Lars?
He is very understated, very deadpan. And one of my favourite comments from him was another interview when England were playing Sweden. I interviewed him and I said, tell me something. Tell me something we don't know. Surprise me. And he said something like, We're going to get new company cars at the Swedish FA. In a few weeks, we will all be driving Nissans. I don't think a lot of people knew that.
Right. It's another exclusive
and,
on.
And I don't know whether he was taking the mickey or not. It was, right. He just said it out there, and I kind of pondered it for a while, and we moved on.
Did you ask him anything similar this time?
No, I don't think they got company cars at the Icelandic FA because he was saying how they have to, the travel arrangements are a bit awkward, he said, but no one's moaning, but they have to go to London and wait for 6 hours for a flight to Cyprus and things like that. They're not a rich football association, but it's brilliant. I really hope they do well on Friday and Tuesday.
They're very excited. They said it's like build up to Christmas in Iceland at the moment ahead of this game. Yeah.
I think they have a decent chance. Croatia are in wretched form at the moment. I think they only barely scraped into qualifiers after what, three defeats and a draw.
They haven't won since
including
March.
Two against Scotland.
And they're going into this game with a brand new manager in Niko Kovac. His first game, the only team he's managed previously is the Croatia under-21s. So.
But that's probably the best news of the lot for Croatia is that they've got rid of Timac, who has, I think, could probably, if there was not a Ballon d'Or, but a leaden balloon would probably win it for the managers in international football.
It was a disaster, all in all.
Right, so, but Iceland, meanwhile, riding the wave of enthusiasm with Ida Gudjonsson and of course, Gylfi Sigurdsson.
It's interesting because they had this team for the under-21s that 2 years ago that got to the European Championships, and now this team is full of all those players.
All right.
So they're all,
apart from Ida Gudjonsson.
Apart from Ida Gudjonsson, who got back in the last 6 months having disappeared off the face of the earth.
So is it their golden generation?
They do have a bit of a
brilliant. All right. Cool. Well, that's the game to watch, really, isn't it?
Well, I would disagree there, but go ahead.
It's at 5 o'clock.
If you can find it.
It's at 5 o'clock. So.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Brilliant.
Definitely one to watch, yeah.
Super duper. Marcus, I know you've got to get back to running big paper, so many thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Right now, a bit of music, then we're back with more World Cup qualifying excitement and Jonathan Wilson in Amman. Right, part two begins with a bit of a treat as we head over to Jordan, where we catch up with Jonathan Wilson, who's been watching that exciting Jordan-Uruguay playoff. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, James. How are you doing?
I'm very well. What led you to go to Amman to see this game?
Because I hadn't seen Jordan before. I thought they might be slightly better than they turned out to be. I mean, I never really expected them to win the tie, but I thought the first leg they might cause a few problems. And I think Jordan generally, from a football point of view, is quite interesting. The sort of investment in grassroots, and particularly in women's football, and they've become the first Arab nation to qualify for women's Asian Championship, which is next year. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in the background, as well as this World Cup playoff.
Right, okay. And the terrific build-up and atmosphere, judging by your article, before the meeting with Uruguay, and then it kind of kicked off.
Yeah, there's a strange sort of... There's a mix of sort of anticipation of the game and kind of desperately wanting to win it. But at the same time, there's just an excitement that Suarez and Cavani and people like that were going to be there. And I think that led to a slightly odd atmosphere at the game, that it was very noisy, it was very passionate, but at the same time, there wasn't the intensity or the hostility that might have upset Uruguay. Not that actually, I think Uruguay are probably mentally strong enough that you could chuck almost anything out and it wouldn't make a difference. But, the end of the game, there's probably about a third of the stadium had left at 3 or 4-0. But the ones who remained, they pulled Uruguay off. They chanted Cavani's name. But you could see when Suarez ran out before the game, there was this sort of this strange, oh, look, there's Suarez. Oh, we're meant to boo him. Boo. And, there wasn't really the hostility that might have got them a result.
Right. What were your thoughts? We know that Uruguay went through a really sticky patch of qualifying, but the idea was that they were building momentum again. And Paul Dabek asking whether Uruguay have any actual chances of winning the World Cup. What do you think, based on their performance there?
Probably not of winning it, but, I mean, they're going to be one of the seeds. I think certainly quarterfinals, maybe semifinals again, as well within their grasp. I think what they do have, and I think this is something that Tavares is really instilled in, they do have this great mental strength. They do have this great ability to just win games. And I think tactically he's very astute. I thought what he did yesterday, he got it absolutely right. They played Ladero rather than Gargano, which just meant they had a creator in the middle of midfield. And he set up the second goal and scored the third. But he wouldn't necessarily be a first choice normally. They just wanted his vision there. And they basically just held Jordan at arm's length and picked him off when they needed to. And I think Tavares would have been quite happy with it with a 1-0. As it turned out, they kept on picking him off. Mm. So I think from a mental point of view, from a tactical point of view, they're pretty much as good as anybody. It's just that once you get beyond the two or three headline names, the quality of the squad perhaps isn't good enough to take them all the way.
Right. Was Tavares actually the real reason you went to see this game, Jonathan?
Tavares, yeah. He's somebody I'd love to have as a father-in-law. Okay. He's a brilliant man. He's getting on. He's really looking his age now. His limp's got worse. He has to walk with a stick all the time now. But he's still got that. I guess he's moved from being the wise old precinct chief in a 70s cop show to being the retired old detective that the maverick cops have to go and consult with when they're kind of running out of steam on a case. But he's still got the same intelligence and the same patience and the same wisdom. He's just a very smart man who's fundamentally right about most things.
Right, okay. Well, good manager on your side. You can go a long way in a World Cup. And where next for you, Jonathan?
I'm coming back to London now, and then I go to Zagreb on Monday, then Oslo on Thursday, then Dublin on Friday.
To see what?
I've been in Zagreb for Croatia v Iceland.
Right.
I'm speaking at a coaching seminar in Oslo. I'm having dinner with Egil Olsen. And on Friday, there's a Blizzard event in Dublin.
Right.
And then hopefully getting back in time to play in a vital game for my hockey team at 12 o'clock. And then hopefully get up to the Emirates for Arsenal Southampton this week.
All right, Jonathan. Well, listen, enjoy the game and your trails. And we'll speak to you soon.
Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers to Jonathan Wilson, who will be appearing there in Dublin next Friday for the Blizzard. That's very interesting. Philippe, oh, you're going to be there as well?
Mm-hmm.
Right, OK. If it can live up to the success of our terrific away day in Swansea, it'll be quite a special, special occasion. It's interesting, Jonathan, mentioning that... I can't think what the name of Frank... What was Frank's name in Hill Street Blues? But that's very much the idea he's going with vis-a-vis Tavares, I think. No?
Yeah, well, he described him on Twitter as a cross between Obi-Wan Kenobi,
right,
and... Frank.
The Sir Alec Guinness Obi-Wan, I'm thinking, not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the kindly police chief who goes, hey, be careful out there.
Well, that wasn't him. That was the sergeant who would do that. Frank would sit at the back with his hot...
No, Frank...
Furillo.
Frank Furillo was a cop. But, no, the old guy.
Ah, yeah, but Tavares looks like Frank Furillo out of Hill Street Blues. To be fair,
right.
I think that's what Jonathan. He's just got a bit confused, but it's an idea you can run with. You know, managers as cop show.
Well, no, he specifically said that he looked.
Yeah,
he looks like Frank Furillo, but I think he meant he in character.
Right.
His nature is
right.
Or the senior guy who used to do assembly in the morning. Or
but you'll agree called. That it's curious how many managers look like they could slot into a 70s. I mean, Roy Hodgson. If anybody should be playing a battered, down on his heels with a flask in his Mac detective, it should be Roy Hodgson, don't you think? And Tony Pulis as well, whose name sounds like police, which is doubly interesting, certainly should be a DI in some...
Spalletti.
Luciano Spalletti.
Yeah,
a little bit of the Montalban going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you got anyone, Jacob?
I just think Pulis would be more like the villain.
I've got.
Doesn't look like a policeman.
Do you think?
No.
I think he looks like a policeman.
I think he'd be the head
of Big Sam, for example, would be there, you know, munching on his donut, throwing the cup of coffee out the window,
a cigar and
sticking the siren on the roof and roaring off, yeah?
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
It is a game you might like to play at home, though, football managers as cop show protagonists. So I think it's harder to find ones who wouldn't fit into a cop show.
Mm.
I've got AVB so far.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody else looks like they could be, you know, flashing a badge. And
I can imagine... AVB being in internal affairs.
Yeah.
None of the other police liking him.
No.
And he's, you know, going around.
Otmar Hitzfeld as well would be a great old cop.
All right, there you go.
It would be fantastic.
Mm. Now, meantime, football. Let's see. Uruguay, of course, finished fifth, and that wasn't including Brazil because they did have that rough patch in qualifying, but they look pretty well sorted now. 5-0 against Jordan, as we were just hearing. Mexico also well on their way, although New Zealand did get that crucial away goal at the Azteca Stadium. 5-1 the final score there, and the second leg still to come.
Well, Mexico, they had their fourth manager in five games for that game, and he, by his day job is to manage a team in the Mexican League.
Team America.
Team America.
Sadly, not that Team America. Actually, they're called Club America.
Yeah. So he didn't select any European-based players and basically drafted in a load of Club America players. Mm. And they are used to his sort of intense pressing style, right. And I think they just swarmed and overwhelmed New Zealand.
The other thing as well, Barry, though, is that the Mexican league is actually very strong and is very, very underrated and undervalued. It's certainly much, much stronger than the MLS if you look at the results that they have in continental competitions. Well, they're very, very strong indeed.
Also made sense because this way they could get together for about 2 weeks before the game, yep. As opposed to just flying in the likes of Chicharito 2 days before.
New Zealand were kind of unlucky, though, because they were missing
Winston
a couple
Reed,
of key
Winston
players,
Reed,
Winston yeah. Reed, foremost yeah,
that's
among
my
them.
New Zealand player.
Yep, that's everybody's New Zealand player.
So is Ryan Nelson still playing for them?
I don't think so.
Right.
But I'm not sure. I mean,
is he managing FC Toronto? He's player manager.
Player manager, but he can still play for New Zealand.
They have a fella from Leicester as well, whose name
Chris
is
Wood.
Chris Wood.
This is genius stuff.
Yeah.
Chris Wood, did he not score against Italy?
Scored against Italy when
yeah, in the 2000 World Cup. Wow. Are we doing a football podcast or what? Anyway, now, a quick word on Chile, who actually finished third in South American qualifying and are facing England at Wembley
they've
this
been,
Friday.
They've been trash-talking England.
They have, haven't
been
they?
Trash-talking
this
England's
is exciting.
Youth.
Yeah. I like
assuming he did actually say that.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
He's a big chap. He's really built, bulked up.
Alexis
actually.
Sanchez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he takes his shirt off these days, it stays taken off. He's looking good as well. Can't get it back on. No, he's been in fine form for Barcelona, of course, and they've got some players. Chile,
like who?
All right, Gary Medel.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Claudio Bravo.
Exactly. Pizarro, the little midfield maestro.
Gonzalo Yarro.
Pinilla, who's a player forward.
They've a couple based in the Championship.
Have they?
Yes, well, they've Yarro at Nottingham Forest. And Jan Bosajur from Wigan.
Oh, yeah, of course. Hmm. Now, England, of course, are unbeaten in 10 and coming off that terrific result against Poland, which sealed their place at the World Cup. No Gerrard, no Carrick, supposedly for this game. Lots of players from Southampton.
For this game or for much longer, actually, Carrick.
Oh, yeah?
I think it's,
yeah,
it's
6 weeks. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Gerrard might take painkilling injections to play against Germany,
right.
Which Liverpool will be pleased about.
Delighted.
Yeah. Why would the point of that be?
Big game.
It's against Germany. Andros Townsend, of course.
Sir Andros Townsend. It's going to be Sports Personality of the Year.
Is he?
No. Oh. But he's kind of gone off the boil a little bit in the last few weeks. I think the Andros backlash has started because he keeps on shooting all the time whenever he gets the ball.
Mm.
But I think the main thing from Friday's game will be to see how the Southampton players do, assuming that Jay Rodriguez and I think he's maybe more likely to start than Adam Lallana.
Really?
You think so?
Well, I just think I'm not sure where Lallana would play because there's a slot for Rodriguez on the left because Welbeck isn't playing.
We could play Lallana on the left, that wouldn't be a problem either.
Yeah, but I think Rodriguez is there as Welbeck's replacement. That's just my hunch. But I think that Lallana is more comfortable sort of in the middle or on the right. So,
well, when you see, it's funny because he's one of those. He's got a very free role with Southampton.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
And actually, he tends to go to the right an awful lot for Southampton. So I think you can imagine. I mean, we could have a bet on that. I think Lallana will start.
Okay. But Townsend is. You know, Rodriguez is half Spanish, and his father had a trial at Deportivo, so we could have like a Yanazai situation with him. But he was asked this, whether he'd ever play for Spain, and in his Burnley accent said, no, not with my accent.
Right. Well, that's a relief.
Yeah.
Of course, England looking good then with all these fresh talents coming in, but they are too soft to win a World Cup, as Alexis was saying.
Ricky Lambert didn't like that.
Did he not?
No, having worked in his...
He's grafted, isn't he?
Beetroot,
yeah. Well, that's the thing, because his Alexis Sanchez saying, everything's so easy for English players. I used to wash cars for such little money, so I had enough money to buy my football boots. When you are at academies like Manchester United and Arsenal, then everything's just given to you. If I'd failed...
Which was not the case of Adam Lallana, who was at Southampton and in League Two at the time.
Right. But would he have been working 15-hour days on construction sites, which is what would have happened to Sanchez had he failed?
Is it supposed to be the best preparation for becoming a great player?
Well, working on construction sites.
Exactly.
Jay Rodriguez took a plumbing course just in case it all didn't work out as a footballer.
Right. Yeah. George Weah, to give you another example, was a telephone repairman.
Adil Rami, certainly not in the same category in terms of player,
right.
Was the local gardener in Fréjus.
Fréjus?
He was the council gardener in Fréjus.
That's remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Phillips used to drive a forklift truck in a warehouse.
Did he? Mm. Marino Torricelli used to work in a timber factory.
I think we've got something of a theme.
Stuart Pearce is a qualified electrician.
There you go.
And he used to put ads for his services in the programme at Nottingham Forest when he started his career. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And of course, Ian Dowie, who's a rocket scientist. Well, at least he worked for British Aerospace and has a degree in, I think, engineering.
It's engineering of some kind.
Engineering. Yeah. And now could be putting that
back to Palace.
To good use at Selhurst Park, Jacob.
Yeah, where he spent 3 years, 2003 to 2006. He's gone off completely out of the game since ruining Phil Brown's good work at Hull.
He's been very much in the punditry business.
He's been on Sky Sports News on a Saturday afternoon.
He's done a lot of work with me, I have to say, on the Premier League's worldwide
guy, isn't he?
But he's a super bloke. Yeah. Not keen on finishing his sentences. Usually he's got so much to say that he's on to the next one before he's barely three words into the first sentence.
Yeah.
But he's got, he's a very nice guy.
Yeah, but when he took over in 2003
at Palace,
now he's about to do that, isn't he, at Palace?
That's true.
But when he took over, they were sort of 21st, 22nd in the league in 2003, and he got them up in the space of 6 months through the playoffs. They beat West Ham in the final and almost kept them up on the final day, but then it's just all seemed to go a bit wrong for him since then. He was one of those highly rated managers who then everything, as I say, went wrong, and he had a bad spell at Newcastle, bad spell at Hull.
Yeah, taking over at stricken Hull and then being Alan Shearer's assistant at Newcastle somehow didn't work out to be the dream jobs that they might have at first appeared. Interesting, that's not confirmed yet.
But the other one they were linked with this week was Dan Petrescu.
Yeah, interesting.
Which, really? They just sort of seem to be plucking names out from a hat now, Palace.
Right. And, of course, they did want to sign Aitor Karanka, but he's gone to Middlesbrough, which we're going to talk to Sid about in a second, assuming we can get past his answering machine. I know, Philip, you wish to talk about the African playoffs.
I just wanted to mention it because there are some quite fruity, tasty ties in the African playoffs, and I think that the one I'll be watching... that'll be on Saturday. Will be the Senegal Ivory Coast game. It was 3-1
to Ivory Coast in the first leg.
Yeah,
they're playing in Casablanca. Is that right?
Yeah, they're playing in Casablanca
because you can't play in Senegal because they had a riot last time.
It's a huge game, obviously. It's not the only one. There's this game between Algeria and Burkina Faso. I think many people were quite surprised to see Burkina Faso win 3-2 the first leg. That should be a pretty hot affair, I'm pretty sure.
Right.
But they're all nicely poised, apart from Egypt, Ghana, Ghana are winning 6-1. So.
Yeah.
The other four are all tight as a drum. There was a suggestion, Ghana don't want to go to Cairo and play the game, and there was a suggestion that they were thinking of just not turning up, taking the 3-0, automatic 3-0 defeat, and still going through.
That sounds like a great plan
because
to me.
They'd win 6-4 in aggregate.
Yeah, nice one. All right, well, that's something we'll be looking back on Monday. We should mention as well the change to the setup at Fulham with René Meulensteen coming in. Is that to prop up Martin Jol or prepare his exit?
Well, I think he wanted him, Martin Jol.
Mm-hmm.
So the general feeling, I think, at Fulham is that while the fans want him gone, the owners or the management seem to Martin Jol to be okay with him being there at the moment, although they are an appalling side at the moment. But Meulensteen has certainly got a good background at Manchester United and worked wonders with Ronaldo. Obviously, Ronaldo was a great player anyway, but he had a great effect on his game, and same for Van Persie as well.
I saw a few training sessions just a couple of training sessions at Manchester United, and he really was the guy who was looking after everything, the technical side, the coaching side. On the other hand, you must say that a guy who, according to some rumours, is not part of David Moyes' team because he wanted greater responsibility at Manchester United, accepting a job like this at Fulham, after being the manager at Angie Makashkala, it's a bit of a cuckoo syndrome, isn't it? This nest ain't big enough for the both of us, I think.
There is a
to quote the Sparks.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's just a, you know.
The Mayall brothers.
Yes.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. Okay. And that's the concern, because in one way it's nice that they don't just go, oh, we'll ditch the manager. They think, well, there may be other things we can do in a more positive sense to make this
and
team more competitive.
It might be a way, if it works, it works, and they can carry on the same thing. And if it doesn't work, they have a
interesting
solution.
The thing about Fulham is that there's been all this attention on Southampton's youth system, but a lot of the coaches who are responsible for that and the scouts and so on are now at Fulham, and they think they've got a lot of very good players coming through there, who the fans would quite like to see in the team instead of some of those older players.
Is Clint Dempsey going back there on one of those loan things?
So he was, yeah, he might be coming back to England, but I think, was it Spurs who had first refusal? Maybe it was Fulham.
Right.
But yeah, he might be coming back in like a Landon Donovan style 3 months.
Well, because Jurgen Klinsmann's urged his US stars to take advantage of prospective loan deals in Europe and get some playing time in.
Be a good signing for somebody.
Yeah, certainly would. Certainly would. Tell you what, let's have a little bit of music, give Barry a prod, and we'll be back with part three.
To buy your copy of Tales from the Secret Footballer for just £6.50, that's 50% off the recommended retail price, head to the Guardian Bookshop at guardianbookshop.co.uk/footballtales and enter the offer code TALES, that's T-A-L-E-S. The offer's valid until the 24th of December.
Hey, how about some posts and tweets, Barry?
Yeah.
Here's Rory Curran. He says, can Lille maintain a sustained title challenge? Lille!
Second best defence in Europe.
Right.
They're
second now in Ligue 1.
They're second in Ligue 1.
4 points behind PSG, 1 point above Monaco.
Who will be champions? Yeah, because the question is like, the reason why people are asking this question is because who is the coach of Lille?
René Girard.
Yeah. What was the team that René Girard led to the title? Montpellier.
Pick me. Montpellier.
Yes. And who did they win the title at the expense of?
Paris Saint-Germain.
Exactly.
Yes.
You know, history repeating itself. First as tragedy, second as farce.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
Oh.
No.
Why?
Well, because you can't see. I mean, Paris Saint-Germain is so far ahead of everybody in terms of the squad, depth of squad and so forth, that there's no way anybody can catch them.
Oh.
The question is more, you have a Marseille team which is going through a rough patch. You've got a Monaco team. You're starting to see that you've got about half a very, very decent side there. And the rest is perhaps not quite as good. Lyon is still nowhere to be seen. But Lille have got some solidity. It's got a good balance between youth and experience. And a manager who obviously knows how to organize a defense. And they're extremely hard to beat. This said, I mean, I think the last result was that 0-0. And after which Girard said, well, yeah, it's an okay result. I'll take that. And you would have imagined in the mouth of somebody who would be fighting for the title, maybe you would be a little bit disappointed to just come off with 1 point.
Right.
But I don't think it can go to the end. But it would be wonderful if they could get one of the Champions League places.
Right, okay.
Of the three or two and a half Champions League places that we've got.
Philippe Mardi Rahimi wants you to talk about the piece you did on Sandro Rosell and his many interesting activities.
Well, how long have we got? And perhaps it's a subject we should talk about with Sid as well.
Well, that's also true. We'll be dialing up in a sec. So we'll come to that in a second then. Other posts and tweets include Big Bopski telling us how to pronounce Guangzhou, which isn't Guangzhou at all. Winners of the Asian Champions League under Marcello Lippi, of course. So just, I think last weekend, wasn't it? Or during last week. Anyway, it's actually Guangzhou. It sounds like Guangzhou. Thanks, Big Bopski. Guangzhou. Big place in China. We mentioned Delia Rossi, who we talked about being on his last legs at Sampdoria, has now gone. We're still waiting for confirmation, but it does look like Sinisa Mihajlovic is going to be taking over there at Sampdoria, which is very interesting. Now, time for a little Sid.
Hey,
Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello, Jimbo. How are you doing?
You sound quite serious today, Sid. Are you in the middle of something important?
I'm in the middle of somewhere on the train.
Oh, no way, you're on a train again. Where to and from?
I'm on my way to Valencia, where I will then pick up a hire car and drive the rest of the way to Villarreal.
Oh, is that where Spain are playing, Sid?
No, Spain are going to Africa. Spain, it's a bit of a scandal, this, because Spain are going to play in a dictatorship.
Go on.
No, I mean, literally, you say go on as if I was saying it as a joke. No, yeah. Spain are going to Guinea, or Guinea, I don't know how you say it in English, Guinea, I suppose.
Yeah.
Guinea, if you say it in Spanish. And that's not a democratic place.
Are the Spanish press, is the Spanish press up in arms about this?
Well, they weren't originally, but as I say, I picked up the plate this morning, and one of the two states have done a big deal, because they're saying that both Amnesty International and human rights groups have asked for the game to be suspended.
Right. Okay.
And there's a concern that the dictator, a guy called Obiang, again, forgive me, but I don't know very much about it, will be kind of making absolutely certain that he gets his photo with the Spanish national team.
Mm. All very unpleasant. We had a couple of things we wanted to ask you about, Sid, but I'm not sure if the coverage is going to be adequate. Iniesta to Man United, very briefly, yay, nay?
No.
Okay. What about Karanka to Middlesbrough? Does that make sense to you?
It's a curious one, this, because to tell you the truth, I think no one in Spain properly knows what Karanka is going to be like as a coach. What we know about him was that the 2 years in Spain's under-16s, of course, at the time with Mourinho. But of course, with Mourinho, he was an assistant coach who was doing a lot of Mourinho's public work. He did a lot of the press conferences, but it was never clear to what extent it was Karanka's own voice and to what extent it was Mourinho's voice. It was how much of what Karanka was doing was kind of driven by him, which of course is natural when you're the assistant coach.
Are you expecting good things or bad things, to sum up?
I think there's certainly the potential there. He's bright, and there is, I think, a bit of a sense that to some extent he almost had to leave Spain, because I think at least at one level, I think he was quite badly burned by the Mourinho experience, in the sense that the good things that were done were never credited to him. A lot of the bad things that were done, because he was often Mourinho's mouthpiece in press conferences and stuff, were also credited to him. And there is there's kind of, I think it might not have done him a huge amount of good, the time at Real Madrid. And of course, he left the side in the 16th squad to become the Madrid.
Sid, I think we've lost Sid there. Here are some of the other things I want to ask him about. Microsoft are going to be sponsoring the Bernabeu. Did you know that?
I did, yeah. It'll have very nice windows.
Right, there you go. Plan B. Philippe, tell us about Sandro Rosell.
Well, yeah, we did a big dossier in France Football about what's happening with Sandro Rosell at Barcelona, seen from two angles. It's quite rare, you know, it's not rare to have political debate and... at Barcelona, we remember what happened with Joan Laporta, and it was a rather troubled reign, certainly the end of it. And Sandro Rosell was seen by many people as, you know, being one from the family. You know, he was associated from the age of six and so forth, and arriving, the guy also was with Laporta and left at the right moment, and, you know, he has his own money and so on, and he was the guy who was going to gather the family of Barcelona. And what's been happening since he's been elected in 2010 has been rather different. For example, Barça has stopped its policy of issuing passes to children under the age of eight for the most prestigious games of the season, for which people have now to pay. He had promised not to touch at the multi-sports nature of the club. Well, the baseball section, which is one of the oldest in Europe, has gone.
Baseball,
which was a very important part. 12 other minority sports have seen their funding slashed. And, of course, there's a whole story about Qatar, the fact that he's completely misled everybody as to the relationship was with QSI. It was nothing to do with Qatar Foundation and charity and so forth.
Now, that was a surprise, wasn't it?
Because Well, you know, especially, I mean, it shows how naive people are, because the question was put to the sources. There was a general assembly, and it was shown, people were saying, well, we have to do that, otherwise we're going to lose Messi. And by driving the fear to the guys who were at the general assembly, they managed to pull this through, but by saying it was with the Qatar Foundation. It's not with the Qatar Foundation. It's by Qatar Sports Investment, who own Paris Saint-Germain, and therefore chose Qatar Airways. So you've got all these things happening. And at the same time, Rosell is in the soup for a couple of stories, problems, big problems. Some of them linked with Mr. Teixeira, the former FIFA member of the executive committee of FIFA, who has been trying to find refuge in Andorra because he fears persecution, and Andorra doesn't have an extradition treaty with Brazil. Who has helped Mr. Teixeira to gain residency in Andorra? Mr. Sandro Rosell, who happens to have been working with Mr. Teixeira on the rights of the national Brazilian team. It's a very, very murky affair.
Is there not some form of police interest from the Brazilian authorities in Rosell?
Absolutely. In a company, not personal, but in a company of which Mr. Rosell owns 99% of the shares and which is linked to, let's say the word, there's big questions about embezzlement and funds which were destined to the CBF and which have found their way into an Andorran bank account. So loads of questions for him to answer. And the extraordinary thing is that it's being reported in Brazil quite extensively, especially by Folha de São Paulo. And it's reported, we report it in France, and in Spain, zilch. Yes. Nothing. The complete omerta around what's happening around Sandro Rosell.
The other story sort of relating kind of to Qatar is that footballer, the French footballer in
Zahir Belounis, yes, yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of coverage this week. And
I'm in contact with Zahir Belounis, and the situation now is absolutely, it's tragic. It's been 2 years now since been trying to leave the country. Let's not forget, he's somebody who had a temporary naturalization so he could play the Military World Cup for Qatar in 2011. Found himself out of favor after helping his club being promoted from the Qatari second division. There was a problem with this club, and the club decided that's it. And they haven't paid him for 2 years. He's had to sell all his furniture. He's living in these basically bare rooms with his wife and his two children. All these people, I'm sorry if I sound angry, but I'm absolutely appalled by the behavior. FIFPro has only sent now a letter to Sepp Blatter, but I'd very much like to know what people like Zinedine Zidane and Pep Guardiola, ambassadors of Qatar 2022, why have they said nothing about the case of this player, which is now has been publicized for months and months and months? We all know what the problem is. They've said nothing.
This publicity that's been going on for a while, has that not had any effect?
None. Terms of his situation? You would imagine as well, because it's terrible, it's very bad publicity for the state of Qatar. You could imagine if Sheikh Tamim, the new emir, goes to the guys of Al-Shaib, I think it's called the club, and says, this is ridiculous, let the guy go. Pay him his money, we'll find an agreement, or I'll pay the money. But nothing like this seems to be happening. And it's been, there have been promises and promises and promises and promises, loads of people have intervened, and he's still locked in Qatar. And, it's an absolute scandal. And it's good that FIFPro has finally woken up. But as I said, if you had a couple of big figures in the world of football, particularly figures who are linked with Qatari football, who spoke out, maybe they don't know, maybe they're badly informed, would make a big, big difference. And, save that guy.
Well, absolutely, Philippe. And he's hoping that the publicity continues to build and that something eventually gets done. Sid has now arrived at his destination, which means we can conclude today's Football Weekly with the Sidster. And whatever he can add to our expert analysis. Oh, there he is. Hi, Sid.
Hello, Jimbo.
Right, you're in Valencia.
I now am in Valencia, yes. So hopefully we can have a problem-free phone call.
Right, OK. Well, we've pretty much wrapped everything up at this end, but the big story now in Spain is Messi versus his hamstring. A lot of people suggesting that we're at a pivotal moment in his career. Your take on this, Sid?
Yeah, well, good. Jorge Valdano was quite interesting on this last night. He said exactly that. He said everyone's acting as if this is the very end. Well, Messi's 26. He's actually coming to the start of his, of his peak, start of the best years of his career. But, of course, the concern is that there are so many questions that I think have been posed by this. The fact that Messi had gone the best part of 4 years virtually without injury, and now this is, I think, the fourth in 2013. The fact that despite Messi's communique yesterday saying that this isn't related to the previous injuries. It's still the same muscle, and so there's a feeling that he's never been fully fit really since that injury against Paris Saint-Germain last year. So this has effectively been going on for the best part of 6 months. But in the summer, he travelled 120,000 kilometres. In other words, could have gone around the world, I think it's 3 times for that. Some of it because Barcelona's pre-season was an absolute joke, and some of it because Messi himself was putting in place lots and lots of commercial events across Latin America and North America, which possibly weren't conducive to him reaching full fitness. Lurking beneath it are question marks about Messi's relationship with the club, because there's people who are, for example, Juan Cobrao, who is the Barcelona physio who travelled with him everywhere, no longer does. Now, Messi came out yesterday and said, this is nothing to do with a breakdown in relationship with us. This is because Juan Cobrao has been promoted by Barcelona to a more senior position, so therefore he's not so hands-on with me. Now, that would be fine, but there is a question there, which is, well, how comes Barcelona never said this? How comes no one ever told us about this promotion? Why hasn't that been talked about? Why, for example, the question marks, of course, about why Barcelona haven't stuck to some of the physical preparation team that worked with Guardiola. And so I think it's more than just an injury, partly because it's Messi, but also partly because it kind of brings some of those questions to the surface that were already lurking a little bit in the background.
Is he going to slow down now, Sid? Do you think he will take some time off?
Barcelona have said 6 to 8 weeks, which, when you look at it, I think means 9 games. I think it's 5 in La Liga. No, 8. 5 in La Liga, a couple of relatively unimportant Champions League games, and I think a Copa del Rey game, which he probably wouldn't have played anyway. It means, in theory at least, that he comes back for the league game that could be a really big deal, which is the last one of the first round of games in La Liga, which, of course, will be Atletico Madrid, which is genuinely a big deal because Atletico are playing so well. I think it also implies, if you look at the way that Barcelona have responded to this, which is to say that Messi will do some of his treatment here and then do some in Buenos Aires basically over Christmas, I think that implies a desire to say to him, disconnect, stop for a bit. You know, get all of this out of your system, get this out of your mind, go and have a break. And of course, that then poses other questions about to what extent has Messi, emotionally not being committed, or perhaps being too committed, and to what extent does he need to have the pressure taken off him on a psychological level as well as a physical one.
Sid Lowe in Spain. Right, OK, that truly wraps it up then for today's Football Weekly Extra.
We're not going to talk about it.
We've run out of time, though.
No, that's fine. No, I just wanted to say, I find it astonishing how much of a kerfuffle his appointment has caused. An Irish TV schedule was changed yesterday.
Really?
So his press conference could be broadcast live. He's the number
assistant
two.
Assistant manager.
It talks a lot of sense, though.
He does. Yeah. He's a smart guy. Yeah. But, and a lot of people who don't know him are very, very judgmental about him. His every utterance from that in that press conference yesterday, and much of what he said was very interesting and very funny, has been just forensically examined at home in Ireland and elsewhere. But it's just extraordinary that a number two, who won't be making decisions, is getting so much attention.
Mm.
He's even mentioned, if you open L'Équipe today, you can see there's a half page about the Ireland national team and Keenan O'Neill. And when you have got all the playoffs and so forth, they found the space to talk about.
Producer Ben has lapsed into giggles now because you said forensically examining the number two. So on that note, we'll leave it there. Thanks, Jacob. Thanks, Philippe. Thanks, Barry. Thanks, producer Ben. And thank you, listener. Enjoy your weekend of international fun and games, and hope everything goes well for your team. We'll be back on Monday. There will be a pay-per-view on Friday. And other than that, see you soon.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag-and-drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.